между Российской Федерацией и Донецкой Народной Республикой.
Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This is another daily update on the situation with regards to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The invasion started on the 24th of February and we're now into October. So this has been going on for three seasons now. We had the whole of the spring, the whole of the summer, and now we're going into the fall, and it doesn't look like there's any end in sight. But over the last week or so, we've seen some really significant developments in the war. So Russia have now announced that they've formally annexed the four regions of Ukraine that they've invaded. And this represents party time for President Putin, and he organised a free concert in the centre of Moscow for all of the citizens. So this was a Live Aid-style event where lots of famous Russian pop stars and rock stars came and gave a concert, and this is seen as being a huge flag-waving celebration for all of the people who attended. And President Putin actually made an appearance himself and decided to organize three cheers for the Russian troops in Ukraine.
Раз, два, три! Ура! Ура! Ура!
So in today's episode, we'll have a look at the details of the 37-minute speech that President Putin gave. We'll then have a look at what the response to this annexation from the West has been, so no major surprises. But I have got really interesting information about Turkey's position on this. I'll then give you an update on what the United Nations position on all of this is. And that is interesting because the United Nations includes Russia, China and India. So I'll let you know exactly what their positions are. And we'll then talk about Ukraine's formal application to join NATO on a fast-track basis. And this could be a complete game changer. So we'll have a look at exactly what the position is and what the implications of that will be for both for the war and the global economy. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is likely to happen over the course of the next 3 to 6 months and what the implications of all of this are for the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I'm on that move towards 200,000, so if you could help, I would really appreciate it. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos, so if you don't have time to watch the entire thing, you can skip through and choose exactly what you do want to watch. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below, where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and Amazon links. Following the Russian announcements of landslide votes in favour of joining Russia for the four regions of Ukraine, President Putin held a formal signing ceremony with the four Russian-appointed heads of the Ukraine regions in the Georgievsky Hall of the Great Kremlin Palace in Moscow. And following the signing session, he gave a 37-minute speech to all of the senior Russian delegates who were present. Now, obviously, nobody watching this video wants to watch 37 minutes of President Putin speaking in Russian. So I'll show you a brief clip now, and then we'll go on to pick out the key points that he mentioned in his speech, because there were some quite controversial statements.
Вы знаете, в Донецкой и Луганской народных республиках, Запорожской и Херсонской областях состоялись референдумы. Их итоги подведены, результаты известны. Люди свой выбор сделали. Однозначный выбор. Сегодня мы подписываем договоры о принятии в состав России Донецкой Народной Республики, Луганской Народной Республики, Запорожской области и Херсонской области. Потому что это воля миллионов людей.
So Vladimir Putin has made it clear that from Russia's perspective, the people of Ukraine always wanted to be part of Russia, and he's done his job by going in and liberating these areas and bringing back these zones into the Russian motherland. Now, all of that's obviously subject to debate, and I'll go on to talk about what the Western response to these announcements has been later in the video. But let's discuss some of the other really interesting things he said during this speech. I want the Kyiv authorities and their real masters in the West to hear me so that they remember this. People living in Luhansk, Donetsk, Kherson and Zaporizhia are becoming our citizens forever. We call on the Kyiv regime to immediately end hostilities, end the war that they unleashed back in 2014 and return to the negotiating table. We are ready for this, but we will not discuss the choice of the people in Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia and Kherson. This has been made. Russia will not betray them. So there's a couple of clear messages here. Firstly, President Putin is stating that these regions are now Russian and there is no matter of debate about that. So he doesn't want to discuss whether or not there's a possibility of him reversing this decision. But more importantly, he's asking Ukraine to come to the negotiating table and end this war that he says they started in 2014. And this is a really interesting angle because he's suggesting that Russia's invasion of Crimea, which at the time was part of Ukraine, so a very similar situation to what we've got today. He's saying that that was actually instigated by Ukraine, which again is suggesting that these areas were always part of Russia and that they were taken over by Ukraine in the past, rather than it being the other way around. So he's inferring that Russia were taking back what was theirs and that Ukraine were the original aggressors. So there's a reverse psychology here because Russia are essentially blaming Ukraine for the current war and are now saying that Ukraine need to come to the negotiating table to put an end to all of this fighting. Now, clearly Ukraine and the West will not agree with that position, but let's put this into context. This is an official speech given in the Kremlin that will be publicly available to all of the people of Russia. And just to remind you, what's going on in Russia right now is there's a lot of anti-war feeling. People don't want to be mobilised. There's a lot of men who are trying to leave the country to ensure that they don't get called up to go and fight in Ukraine. So a lot of anti-war feeling right now. So President Putin is putting a spin onto all of this to say that it's actually Ukraine who are starting these hostilities back in 2014. And he's putting the blame firmly on them and that Russia are essentially defending their territory. So he's trying to twist this from an invasion to a defence of these regions. But the bottom line here is that he's made it very clear that these four regions are now seen as officially being part of Russia, and therefore there will be no negotiation in terms of handing back this land. And I think that's really bad news overall in terms of the outlook for the war, because Russia are taking their position now, and it's unlikely that Ukraine and the West will agree to hand over all of this land. And so we've got a complete difference of opinion here, and it's likely that that means that the conflict will carry on. We will defend our land with all the powers and means at our disposal. In 1991, in the Belovus Forest, without asking the will of common citizens, representatives of the then party elites decided to destroy the USSR, and people suddenly found themselves cut off from their motherland. This tore apart and dismembered our nation, becoming a national catastrophe. So once again, there's a few important messages here. Firstly, President Putin's inferring that he doesn't agree that the Soviet Union should ever have been broken up. He's saying that they should have asked the people if they wanted to remain part of the Soviet Union. And this obviously is a direct link to what's going on today, because he's inferring that all of the people in these four zones in Ukraine actually always wanted to be part of Russia. And what he's doing is basically bringing them back into the motherland as part of this operation. But the other message that he's sending here is that Russia is prepared to defend its land with all means at its disposal. So once again, this is another veiled threat about nuclear weapons. And of course, the four areas that they've annexed in Ukraine are now seen as being part of Russia. So if you follow President Putin's logic through, by annexing these regions, they become part of Russia. Therefore, it's a defense strategy, and that justifies using nuclear weapons. That's the logic. The United States is the only country in the world that has twice used nuclear weapons, destroying the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and setting a precedent. Even today, they actually occupy Germany, Japan, the Republic of Korea and other countries, and at the same time cynically call them allies of equal standing. So I think this is probably the most concerning part of President Putin's speech, because he's referring to the two nuclear bombs that were detonated in World War II and saying that the USA has set a precedent. So what he means by this is that the USA using those weapons to bring a conclusion to World War II has set a precedent as a way to bring a stop to hostilities. So he's inferring that it would potentially be acceptable to use a nuclear weapon in the Ukraine conflict if it brings a satisfactory conclusion to all of the fighting. And he's basically putting the blame on the USA, saying, well, you did it first, so therefore you can't blame me if we do the same thing in one of our wars. And he's then gone on to insult the national pride of Germany, Japan, and Korea by suggesting that the USA is controlling and occupying those countries. which is obviously designed to try to raise anti-US feeling in all of those nations, and also is designed to directly upset the USA. So quite an antagonistic message, but the concerning thing here is the reference to the USA using nuclear weapons first, which is potentially being used as a justification for Russia following suit. Sanctions were not enough for the Anglo-Saxons. They moved on to sabotage. It is hard to believe, but it is a fact that they organised the blasts on the Nord Stream international gas pipelines, which run along the bottom of the Baltic Sea. It is clear to everyone who benefits from this. So this is a direct accusation that the West organised the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines. And a Russian minister has recently come out and stated that the USA had the most to gain as a result of these pipelines being damaged. So there's a concerted effort of pointing the finger here at the West stroke USA, saying that they have done this. Now, the Russians are currently undertaking an investigation as to what happened to those pipelines, and they'll be looking at the areas where the blasts took place. And one thing that will be quite easy to identify is whether or not the detonations were on the inside of the pipe or the outside. So it'll be very easy to see whether or not this was an external strike or an internal job. So we'll have to wait and see what the findings of that investigation are, because if this was an internal blast, then it'll be very difficult for Russia to try to blame the USA, because they're in charge of the interior of that pipe. The West began its colonial policy back in the Middle Ages, and then followed the slave trade, the genocide of Indian tribes in America, the plunder of India, of Africa, the wars of England and France against China. What they did was hooking entire nations on drugs, deliberately exterminating entire ethnic groups. For the sake of land and resources, they hunted people like animals. This is contrary to the very nature of man, truth, freedom and justice. Now obviously these comments don't have any direct link to the annexation of the four areas of Ukraine. But what President Putin has done here is he specifically named a number of different countries as being victims of the West. So China and India have been identified as two individual countries. And obviously they're the two biggest countries in the world and the two trading partners that Russia is looking to work closer with, as they've now been sanctioned by the whole of the West. He's also made references to slavery and Africa, which obviously covers another large portion of the world. And then he specifically named America, England and France as being the perpetrators of all of these atrocities in the past. So what President Putin is doing here is he's trying to rally the people of Russia to support Russia against a common enemy. So rather than this conflict being directly with Ukraine, he's opening it up to talk about the West, and he's talking about things that have happened in the past to once again try to put Russia into a position of liberation. They're fighting an evil enemy is the way that he's putting it forward to his people. And I think this is an attempt to try to get some support behind the Russian efforts in Ukraine. And references like this and talking about the Soviet Union is really trying to get that nationalistic feel back so that everybody gets behind the efforts in Ukraine rather than the current situation where nobody really is supportive of the war and everybody's worried about their own situations. Now they've moved on entirely to a radical denial of moral norms, religion and family. The dictatorship of the Western allies is directed against all societies, including the people of Western countries themselves. This is a challenge to all. This is a complete denial of humanity, the overthrow of faith and traditional values. Indeed, the suppression of freedom itself has taken on the features of a religion, outright Satanism. Do we really want here in our country, in Russia, instead of mum and dad, to have parent number one, parent number two, number three? Have they gone completely insane? Do we really want it drilled into our children in schools that there are supposedly genders beside women and men and children to be offered the chance to undergo sex change operations? We have a different future. Our own future. Now, there's obviously quite a lot of controversial comments that he's made in this section of his speech, and I'm not going to open a can of worms by discussing any of the matters that he's raised. But what I will pick out is that he's identified the religion of Satanism as being predominant in the West, and I'm not entirely sure that that's correct. I don't know any Satanists myself. It's not something that I'm familiar with. I think he may have picked up the wrong end of the stick on that one. But I'll leave you to make your own decisions on what he said and whether or not you think this is a logical speech that will appeal to the majority of people in Russia. So let's have a look at what the official response from the US and the other G7 members has been to Russia's announcement of this annexation.
Based on our information, every aspect of this process was pre-staged and falsified under orders from the Kremlin. The sham referenda were held at gunpoint. Ukrainian civilians were forced to cast ballots through coercion, intimidation, and in some cases under the watch of armed guards. Saying that it somehow reflects the will of the people is an absurdity. As we saw from the Treasury Department and as the President underscored, we are sending a clear warning from the United States government, supported by all of our G7 partners. We will sanction and impose export controls on any individual, entity, or country that provides political or economic support to these attempts at annexation. We have put in place authorities to enable us to do that rapidly and efficiently. We are also announcing new sanctions today that target additional Russian government officials and leaders, including State Duma members who are accomplices in these fraudulent actions, and including the central bank governor. Today, the United States is supporting a resolution at the UN Security Council to condemn these sham referenda and to call on Russia immediately to withdraw its forces from Ukraine. We do not presently see indications about the imminent use of nuclear weapons. We are, of course, monitoring that carefully and staying in close consultation with allies and partners. But this is something that we are attuned to, taking very seriously, and communicating directly with Russia about, including the kind of decisive responses the United States would have if they went down that dark road.
So this annexation has resulted in a wave of additional financial sanctions against Russia. And these sanctions are identifying any company or individual that has supported this annexation process. The US has identified 57 companies in Russia and Crimea who are now barred from making any exports. Alongside this, they've also sanctioned 14 people in Russia's military-industrial complex, two leaders of the central bank, family members of top officials, and 278 people who are involved in organising the referendums. Among those identified were Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak, 109 State Duma members, the Federation Council of the Federal Assembly of Russia, and 169 of its members, and the Governor of the Central Bank of Russia, Elvira Nabulina. Canada also announced measures against dozens of oligarchs, financial elites, and their family members, plus 35 Russian-backed senior officials in the regions where the referendums took place. The European Union has also introduced its eighth batch of sanctions against Russia, and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said new import bans would cost Russia 7 billion euros in lost revenues, and that the EU would also expand the list of prohibited exports to deprive the Kremlin's war machine of key technologies. Under the proposal, European companies would be barred from providing more services to Russia, and European citizens would not be allowed to sit on boards of Russian state companies. The UK have also imposed new sanctions, which mean that Russia will lose access to major Western services that Russia depends on, including IT consultancy, architectural services, engineering services, and transactional legal advisory services for certain commercial activities. The UK has also banned the export of nearly 700 goods that are crucial to Russia's industrial and technological capabilities. So from a financial perspective, this annexation announcement is going to represent even more bad news for Russia. Turkey's foreign minister has announced that it rejects Russia's annexation of the four regions of Ukraine. This decision, which constitutes a grave violation of the established principles of international law, cannot be accepted. We reiterate our support for the resolution of this war, the severity of which keeps growing, based on a just peace that will be reached through negotiations. Now, this is an interesting development because, as you'll know if you follow the channel, Turkey have taken an entirely neutral stance with regards to the war. Turkey has strong trading relations with Russia, and President Erdogan and President Putin recently had a meeting after which they announced that there was going to be closer cooperation between the two countries and that Turkey wanted to do more trade with Russia. So it's surprising that Turkey have come out and stated that they don't accept this annexation, because this announcement by Russia is all part of the plan to try to bring a successful conclusion to this war. They want to annex this zone and then start to talk about a peace settlement with this area staying part of Russia. And Turkey coming out and saying that they don't support this action undermines President Putin's strategy here. So really quite an interesting development, and the first time that Turkey have come out against Russia as part of all of these discussions. The United Nations Security Council have had a meeting to discuss a resolution put forward by the USA and Albania condemning Russia's proposed annexation of the four regions of Ukraine. US Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield introduced the resolution that called on member states not to recognize any altered status of Ukraine and obliged Russia to withdraw its troops. She argued that the attempted annexation of a sovereign nation's territory went against the founding principles of the United Nations and said Putin was celebrating this clear violation of international law with a concert held after he proclaimed the annexations. 10 nations voted in favour of this resolution, while China, Gabon, India and Brazil abstained. Russian Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia, who raised his hand to give the only vote against the resolution, argued the regions where Moscow has seized territory by force and where fighting still rages chose to be part of Russia. There will be no turning back as today's draft resolution would try to impose, he said. China abstained from the resolution but raised concerns about a prolonged and expanded crisis in Ukraine. Beijing's ambassador argued that while the sovereignty and territorial integrity of all countries should be safeguarded, countries' legitimate security concerns should also be taken seriously. A US official commented on this by saying that China's abstention showed that Russia's saber-rattling and moves that threatened states' territorial integrity put China in an uncomfortable position. So it's interesting that nobody officially voted in support of Russia's annexation. But crucially, China and India, which are the two trade partners that Russia is trying to get closer to, both abstained as part of this vote. So officially, they're sitting on the fence. They're not condemning this action. They're not saying that it should be stopped. But equally, they're not coming out and saying, yes, we agree with Russia. So this is a neutral ground and something that we've seen from other countries who want to maintain their trading relations. So a lot of countries are trying to separate what's happening on the political agenda and the fighting with all of the trade side of life. In direct response to Russia's annexation of the four Ukrainian territories, President Zelensky of Ukraine has submitted a fast-track application to join NATO. We are taking our decisive step by signing Ukraine's application for accelerated accession to NATO, he said in a video posted on Telegram. In his video speech, Zelensky accused Russia of rewriting history and redrawing borders and of using murder, blackmail, mistreatment and lies. He said that Kyiv remained committed to the idea of coexistence with Russia on equal, honest, dignified and fair conditions, but that clearly with this Russian president, that is impossible. He does not know what dignity and honesty are, therefore we are ready for a dialogue with Russia, but with another president. With regards to the NATO application itself, he stated, "We understand that this requires the consensus of all the alliance's members, and therefore, while this is happening, we propose the realization of our proposals regarding security guarantees for Ukraine and all of Europe according to the Kyiv Security Compact." So this is a really interesting move because one of the reasons for Russia's invasion of Ukraine was that they did not want them to join NATO. Russia was concerned that if Ukraine joined NATO, then NATO would have the opportunity of setting up military bases all along the Russian border. Now clearly things have moved on a lot in the last 7 months. But one of the questions that has to be raised now is that if Ukraine joins NATO, will that lead to an immediate involvement of all of the NATO allies as part of this war? Because the NATO ethos is that it will support all of its member states against any aggression, against any military conflict. So if Ukraine does join NATO, then all of the 30 member states would potentially have to join behind Ukraine against Russia. Now, obviously, those implications will need to be taken into account by NATO when they're assessing this application, because they would essentially be starting World War III, because you would have 31 countries against Russia in an official war zone. And the other issue, which has rightly been highlighted by President Zelensky, is that any approval will need to be unanimous. All 30 member states need to vote in favour of this. And if you follow the channel, you'll be aware that Sweden and Finland recently applied to join NATO. And those applications were vetoed by Turkey because they said that they had issues with regards to both countries harboring terrorists who are against Turkey. And it took some time, but a negotiated settlement was agreed between the three parties and Turkey lifted their veto. So Turkey is probably the key member state here because they've taken a neutral position. They've got a good relationship with Russia. So they will probably not automatically approve any application that's put forward for Ukraine joining NATO because they know that as soon as that happens, then all of NATO will be behind Ukraine against Russia. So once more, Turkey is going to hold a pivotal role in this voting process. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because the formal annexation of the four Ukrainian territories marks a step change in this war. We are now seeing things moving onto a different level. And Russia have changed their position from being the aggressors, from going in and seizing this land and occupying overseas territory, to saying that they've now moved the border, that all of these areas are now officially part of Russia, and they're now defending themselves against Ukrainian aggression. And it's really interesting to note that President Putin claims that Ukraine started all of this back in 2014. So he's essentially saying that all of these areas should always have been part of Russia, and he's just liberating these states and bringing these people back into the motherland. Now, that position has obviously been rejected by Ukraine and the West, and we've seen a range of additional sanctions being applied against Russia. So the direct impact of this annexation is going to be more financial pain. Russia is going to suffer even more. They'll have less opportunity for imports and exports as a result of this. So they will lose more revenue. But the bigger issues here are the impact on the war itself. Russia have set out their stall now. They are now saying, we've taken these territories, they're now officially part of our country, that's the end of it. We would like to discuss a negotiation to agree a settlement on all of this with Ukraine. Now, clearly Ukraine are not going to roll over and agree to President Putin's demand. There is some fierce fighting going on right now, and they are actually trying to take back some of these regions that Russia has claimed for itself. But the problem that we have is that Russia is digging in for the long haul. We know that they've issued the mobilization, and potentially up to 1 million men are going to be conscripted and sent to fight in Ukraine. And President Putin has inferred that he's prepared to use any means necessary, which means essentially he's issuing a nuclear threat to anybody that's supporting Ukraine in this war. And some of his comments that he made as part of his speech, whereby he's raising issues about slavery and colonialism, is really digging back into the past to try to get support from all of the people in Russia to make this more of a nationalistic war rather than being an invasion of an overseas territory. And in direct response to all of this, Ukraine have now made a formal application to join NATO. Now, in terms of timing, this is obviously a cry for help from Ukraine. They've seen what Russia have done. They've officially taken this land. And Ukraine really want the support of all of NATO to take it back, to return it to Ukrainian ownership. But the problem that NATO has is that there is an actual war going on. So normally when there's an application to join NATO, it's during a time of peace, and a country will be concerned that potentially something may happen in the future, and therefore they want the security of having all of these other countries behind them. The fact that Ukraine is officially at war really changes the perspective, because NATO would essentially be signing a war declaration. They would be stepping into this conflict from day one. And I'm not sure that the members of NATO will want that, because what they would be doing by signing the papers allowing Ukraine to join is essentially signing a war declaration against Russia. And Russia's already stated that it's prepared to use nuclear weapons. So this could really escalate quite quickly into a potential World War III situation. And obviously NATO doesn't want that. Everybody wants a peaceful settlement here. We want to get some sort of agreement where we can go on with our normal lives, get back to talking about something else rather than the fighting in Ukraine. So I don't think that this fast-track application will actually be fast-tracked by NATO. I don't think it's in anybody's interest for Ukraine to become a member of NATO tomorrow, because that is really going to cause a lot more fighting. But in terms of what's the overall summary here, well, Russia are really upping the ante. They are making the next steps in this war. They've claimed this area, they've taken the territory, they're now saying it's part of Russia, and that there is no turning back, and that they will be defending these territories. So they've drawn a line in the sand, and it'll be interesting to see what the way forward is from here, because I don't think Ukraine and the West will agree to these demands, and so we're at loggerheads. This war is likely to go on for quite some time yet, certainly for the rest of 2022, and it could go on well into 23 and even beyond that. I've mentioned it before, but Russia's invasion of Chechnya back in 2000 resulted in a 9-year conflict. Now, hopefully it won't be anything like that, but we are looking at potentially a very long war here, and that is really bad news for the global economy, because the uncertainty that this war is causing volatility on the markets, and it's causing the cost of a lot of things to rise, because we're seeing changes in the global supply chains and shortages. And we've already got really high inflation all around the world, and whilst this war goes on, that's likely to continue. Now, governments around the world are trying to address that inflation by increasing interest rates, but if the war carries on, that won't work. So what we'll find is we'll have a situation where we've got high interest rates, which will be causing pain for a lot of economies because people will have to pay more for all of their debt, at the same time as high prices. And that's going to cause the economies to contract, and likely result in a global recession. So this war is having a really negative impact on the global economy. And unfortunately, the events over the last few days mean that it's likely that this war is going to carry on for quite a long period of time yet. So strap yourselves in, everybody. It's likely we're in for a bumpy ride. It's likely that that recession's coming, and it's likely that that recession could be a really big one. So sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but I can only tell you as I see it, and that's how I see it right now. If you've liked what I've said today, if you thought it was interesting, thought-provoking, educational, please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.